This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey sports fans, it's Chris Howard, former Jacksonville Jaguar running back and 1997 National Championship running back from the University of Michigan. Get plugged in with me every week as I'll be breaking down the biggest topics in the world of sports and entertainment. Join me and my special guests for some honest conversations about sports and life when the cameras are no longer flashing. I'll also be breaking down weekly matchups for NFL and college football games. Be in the know, listen to, and follow Plugged In with Chris Howard now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. This week we're going to bring back our good friend Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. But before we get started, here's Geico.
Do you own, do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to Geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com.
Guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Bill Goldberg. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Yeah, you're good.
You with Goldberg?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, check out Bill's Instagram, and you can see his pet bird sitting on his head. It's a long story,
In a short summarization, we found this bird at a baseball game. It fell out of the nest as a baby. We brought it back and nursed it back to health 2 days ago, I guess about a month after we found it. We let it go. And I'll be damned if I wasn't walking in the kitchen this morning and I hear this freaking bird and I walk outside and he lands on my head. So it's a pretty cool story, man.
Pauses for a photo. It's like, yeah, he doesn't want to leave. We got the big garage going on. It's got lots of friends and animals there, and mom's been feeding him.
Brought him a whole thing of new water and, you know, mealworms. And yeah, he had a nice breakfast and shit on my hand and then took off again.
He'll be back. When he gets hungry, he'll be back.
Yeah, he'll be back. I guarantee you he'll be back.
So last we're going to have Alistair come on, by the way. Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. Excited about getting into some things with him. I know he's been driving some pretty interesting things. Spent some more time with the Rivian, I believe, and a number of things. So we're going to get into that. But last time we spoke, you sent the new TRX out to get the Expel PPF and get the ceramic coating. And was that right?
Not yet. No, I sent it out to get the lights, the rigid lights put on, put the Nitto 37s on, put the HRE new truck wheels on, and then I drive to another baseball tournament in it this weekend, and then Monday we drop it off to Expel for all the PPF treatment and the wrap and ceramic coating and all that kind of stuff that I did on the first one. But I got to tell you, man, I just love the truck. And I'm going to keep this one regular gas because
That's what we were talking about. It's funny because we got into that about how you don't want to use the E85. You've got the other truck set up for it, but it is a kind of a pain in the ass to find the 85 station. Yes. And here we are a week later, and Dodge is teasing another sort of halo car, a Dodge Challenger that's possibly E85 capable and knocking on the door of 900 horsepower, 885 or 875, wherever it's going to end up being. We're not quite sure yet. But we kind of got this teaser a little while ago, 6 months ago, after you guys were wrapping the donut maker stuff. There were some teasers and stuff came in from Dodge and the boss, Tim Kaniska, saying, you know, hey, before we start going to EV muscle cars, right, or some sort of hybrid muscle car, we're gonna go out on a bang, and we're not quite sure what that means yet. And he sort of alluded to some car products, possibly some aftermarket products, something maybe we can see at SEMA later this year through Mopar. We weren't quite sure, but now we're starting to get a little bit of an idea of what he might have meant.
I can honestly say the only negative that I have against Dodge is that those fuckers take my money and then and then announce something new that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
So, that's all.
I mean, look, it'd be nice to get the inside track, but if you've been watching some of the car auctions and Bring a Trailer and what's going on in the aftermarket world or in the second owner world, I guess you could say, you know, TRXs, Challengers, Demons, you know, Red Eyes, on some level, Shelby GT350s, GT350Rs, some GT500s, track packs, you know, they're all doing pretty well with, you know, with a few miles on them. You know, those cars are pretty desirable. Arguably still hard to get. I haven't shopped for one in a while, so can't really say. But, you know, aside from that, like aftermarket's where to go is because you can't necessarily get them new. So they're, you know, if something catches your fancy, it could be sell an existing car, do well on it, do fair on it, and get into something new. I mean, because you've got, let's just say, the full catalog of products going on over there. And although we've mostly focused on the modern cars because that's the ones you're driving and you're playing around with right now. But you've got the vintage car collection. We just haven't dug into it too much because everything's sort of in storage and until the garage is done. But, you know, getting into something new isn't the worst. By the way, who knows? It could be a 6-month waiting list on a new car or something. So, you know, guess we'll see.
And realistically, we don't know exactly what it is. But if it's another iteration of the Challenger, right?
Yeah,
we had this conversation about Superstock a while ago, and I haven't seen many of those at auction by any stretch of the imagination. So I guess the question is that how many times can they reintroduce the Challenger and have it be palatable, you know, because it's not something that where you can't change a PCM, right? Or you can get an upgrade and you can have an Challenger perform just like whatever they're coming out with. So,
And they're not going to be interesting. They're not going to redesign the car now for the gas engine. Right. And there's only so much they can do before they'd have to, you know, re-crash test and things like that. So they're just going to keep throwing horsepower at it, and that seems to be selling well, and it gets them a lot of press coverage. So go out with a bang and throw some horsepower at it.
Absolutely. I'm not complaining by any stretch of imagination. I don't know anybody else in the world that is. But
speaking of horsepower – it took me a minute, but I got around to reading through the Mustang Hub magazine. If you guys aren't familiar, Mustang Hub is a print magazine for the Mustang community, both old and new cars. And I subscribe to it. I think it's quarterly. I think they only do 4 issues a year. And it's a really nice book, you know, good quality, great photos, good print quality. And I had the subscription. Then something with the subscription, some magazines couldn't. I don't know. They weren't getting in. And then I called them up, and they settled it up. We're gonna bring Alistair in just a second. But I got around to reading the article about your Lawman Mustang. You know, we've been talking about it for a while. Now seeing a bunch of the photos that Marcus Angel has put together in the magazine and reading the story about it and the process of restoring it. Just a great article, a great story about a very interesting car, well done restoration. And I know we've been talking about the car for a little while. And, you know, once you get it out of storage and put it in a new garage, maybe we can spend a little time, you know, fire it up and get some more photos of it and have you maybe just walk around. I know you got plans for the YouTube channel. You know, maybe you could go through it a little bit more. But let me tell you, it's a very, very cool car. It's a great article. If you guys are interested in that Lawman Mustang, you should try to find an issue of Mustang Hub, or maybe they have the article online. I'm not quite sure. I've got the actual print book. I like the actual print book.
Yeah, I got to get one of those. And quite obviously, so talk to your people and if you can grab another one.
Yeah, well, that shouldn't be a problem. It was well done, and yeah, it was just kind of like I didn't know when the issue was going to come out or what it was going to entail, and then I finally got it, and I was like, oh, this is the Lawman article that we were talking about for like a year ago, and here it is. That is just a cool car. Just the amount of attention and detail that went into the restoration of that car, the story of its iterations of it is interesting. So we'll spend some more time on that. Maybe loop back in with Marcus as well. Now that sort of the dust has settled on this project, because we haven't had a chance to overview it with him and sort of now that it's done and it's delivered, he can kind of go through the, you know, what was the headache and what was the easy stuff. Yes. And kind of where it goes, you know, because I know he's had, look, big project for sure. Big project for sure, but well worth it. Done well, done right. And
I would have had no other person do that car on the planet.
Yeah,
I really wouldn't.
This is one of those projects where it's just like you're just happy with it. Like it was the right guy. He did the right job. You know, going through and so well documented the details in the restoration. You know, we get cars back. We send out to a bunch of different vendors. And, you know, and by the way, somebody can have a big shop and a good reputation, but they've got 30 employees working there or something, and there's a little bit of a turnover, and some of the people are young, and they're just trying to learn. And the boss over there who built the reputation isn't necessarily the guy who can give every car the attention it deserves. And I'm not naming names, but we've run into this issue a few times, and our guy Sean at the shop is over there going, you know, we've got to make some changes. We're not too real happy with this. I've got to redo a few things, and this is broken, that's broken. And this is not that case. This is one of those home run, you know, grand slam home runs going, it took a little while, but that was to be expected. Expectations were set correctly, and just put together a cool car. Would you agree?
Let's just say that thankfully you get what you pay for.
Yeah. I can't imagine that was inexpensive. All right, let's bring Alistair in. Let's he shakes his head. There he is. Hey, Alistair, how are you?
Good morning, gents. I'm not too bad, thank you.
Hang on. That's better. That should be working now.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, are you? You're in the office today?
I'm in the office. Yeah, radical, hey.
Yeah, I don't.
It's like a ghost town. We've like cut the office in two, but there's literally typical day. There's probably like 20 people here.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really depressing.
Well, I mean, you've been working from home and working from around the world, so there's a little bit of traveling. You got to go back to the office at some point.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I like the human interaction. Are we live, by the way, or are we just chatting?
No, we're recording. We're on the show. You're on the show. We're doing it. We already started.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, I see. Good morning, everybody.
There it is.
Before I say anything, too controversial.
Very hard.
Yeah.
You can always cut it out.
Wait, did Alistair say
all of his
people?
It's always good to check the mic is live, isn't it?
Yeah, right? I think Alistair said all of his people were lazy and he wished they were back in the office.
No, we're all good.
Yeah, we're all good.
Everyone is working super hard.
Everybody's working super hard. I know you've got a bunch to go over. Let me just preface this by saying, Bill, I know you've got a...
We are live, right?
We are live. Bill's got a very busy schedule. He's got a documentary, a wrestling documentary coming out, the CBD supplements coming out. We've got our Bravago stuff coming out, and I know you've got a bunch of press. So at any point, just let us know if you need to go off to the next thing, because I know you've got a press scheduled today.
Thank you, sir.
But that being said, Alistair, it feels like it's been a minute. You've been all over the place, driving cars, testing stuff. I know there's been a couple things that we're particularly interested in. Let's start off with Rivian, because you had high marks for Rivian, but now you've had more time to drive the vehicle. Have you been just in the pickup truck? Did you guys get delivery of your truck, or are you talking about also driving the SUV recently?
Yeah, well, sort of both. Our pickup truck arrived probably about a month ago now, but we've also been out to New York. Not me personally, but a member of the team went out to New York to drive the R1S, which is the three-row. So it's basically a truck with the bed cut off and then turned into an SUV. So, yeah, I mean, our trucks have arrived. I think we've already done like 3,000 miles, spent a couple of weeks in it. And, you know, it's still a really cool thing. And the only challenge with it, the challenges are more about infrastructure. And we talked about this before than the truck itself, because this thing has got a colossal battery. I think it's like over 130 kilowatts. And this thing is half as efficient in our testing as a Tesla Model 3. So think of it as kind of like a Dodge Hellcat in EV world.
Yeah,
which
right.
As long as you're willing to Bill. As long as you're willing to accept the electricity cost, that in theory is okay. The reality is, though, if you want to charge it, you know, we talk about these 50 kilowatt hour chargers as being fast charging. If you Google it on your phone, it says fast charger. If you plug the Rivian into a 50 kilowatt fast charger, you're going to be sitting there for a minimum of 2 hours. Let's say you're at like 20% charge and you want to get to 70, 80%. It's a couple of hours because they're 50 kilowatts an hour. The battery's 130 kilowatts. And of course, it slows down as it gets to the end of its charge. So that becomes the big problem. And then it ran all the way down just a few miles left. I pulled into the office. At the office, we've got like a almost like a typical domestic charger, what we call level two. Plug that in, 19 hours to get from 3% to 70%, not even to 100. So it's like a normal household charger doesn't really cut it. I mean, maybe if you keep topping it up every night. So it's like every time you stop in your garage, you've got to plug this thing in.
Yeah,
assuming it'll fit in your garage. Bill's garage, maybe, not mine. And so that's the one of like the big challenges about it. The other problem with it is actually it's not that – you realize like it's not actually that big. Like I put the kids in the back seat. My three-year-old was complaining about lack of leg room. And then – yeah, seriously. And then the rear-facing baby seat for the four-month-old – I couldn't then get into the front passenger seat. So I wanted to do some work and my wife was going to drive. And I was like, I can't even sit in here. there's more room in a Model 3. So overall, I mean, it's still a cool thing and I like it a lot. But the biggest problem is the infrastructure. It's not even the product. It's the fact that, you know, there just aren't enough fast chargers. The nearest 350 kilowatt charger to my home is like 20 minutes away, 30 minutes away. And I live in the absolute epicenter of EV land in South Bay of Los Angeles. Like everybody has an EV. And, you know, that's why Tesla, you know, remains so, you know, so potent in this market because they've got their own infrastructure. And the rest of us, you know, you really have got to have 150 kilowatts or more to call it a fast charger. So we're doing a whole bunch of work on it and there's more to come. But outside of really that, it's a cool truck and it gets so much attention.
Yeah.
It's literally like, I mean, I think I remember driving the original smart car, the little two-seater, and that got tons of attention. And obviously, if you're out in something super exotic, but yeah, everybody wants to stop and talk about it.
So what kind of – have you done your actual range test? You have like an estimate, I'm sure, but have you done your Edmunds range test on it yet?
Yeah, we have, and I'm just going to look it up as we talk, Matt. So there's two things in the range test. Right? One is how far does it go? So at the moment, our longest vehicle, and this, if people haven't heard this before, basically we take every single EV we get in around a predetermined loop around Southern California, so driving it consistently. And we even now have little gadgets on board which sort of talk to you as you drive so that you're not using too much throttle. So we're getting a consistent result across the board. And often this can take like 12, 15 hours of driving. I mean, the Lucid is the range leader at the moment, 505 miles. I'm just digging out the Rivian as we speak. So the Rivian, the EPA was 314. We did 317 miles, which is a great result.
Yeah.
But of course, that's all determined by the size of the battery. And so then if you look at the – if you then go down to the efficiency chart, this is at edmunds.com/range, and you flip the and look at it on the efficiency, we manage 46.9 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. So this is kind of like an MPG equivalency. So that was 46.9. To give you some context, something like a Model 3 long range, which I think is still like the biggest selling – biggest selling EV, standard range plus, sorry, not long range, standard range plus, that's 23 kilowatt hours, so basically half. And then if you go down to mini, it's like 22. So it's massive. I mean, it's still a truck, right? But it is still, you know, guzzling electricity.
Right.
And of course, it weighs 7,200 pounds and all the rest of it.
The issue isn't really the range, right? The range is on par with what we're doing with EVs right now. It's just when you need to charge that battery up, you know, to get 50 miles of range on that battery compared to many of the other EVs, in particular like the Tesla like you're talking about, it just requires a lot more charging time and a lot more power need to be generated.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically double. So yeah, infrastructure is a thing, but as you're saying with Rivian, it's a cool truck. It seems like it's fun. I'm seeing them all over the place. They look cool. But it, I don't know, for lack of better terms, still a bit of a novelty item, you know, in the way that, you know, a high-end luxury car or exotic car or something, or even, you know, a crazy muscle car would be. Actually, you're probably pretty spot on going on saying it's kind of the you know, the Hellcat of EV trucks, right? Because it's kind of a novelty item and it's quick and it gets a lot of attention. And And, you know, maybe it's not your daily driver. Maybe you've got something else. And yeah, you're Hellcat because you know, it's tough to keep your foot off the gas. And when you're driving it and having fun, you're going to have to stop at a gas station more often than you would in, you know, in a normal sedan. And in this particular case, you're going to have to top off this battery more than you would probably other EVs that are out there. If you're plugging your Tesla once or twice a week at home, this is, you're going to want to maybe top it off every night or every other night, right?
All the time. Yeah. Every time you stop. And obviously bear in mind, if you drive it,
it'd be nice
if you drive it like a Hellcat.
Analysis on the full charge of one of those Rivians.
Sorry, Bill, I missed that.
It would be very nice to have a cost analysis on what it would take to charge, fully charge from zero, that Rivian.
Yeah, I mean, that's for we could calculate that pretty quickly, Bill, because it obviously depends where you live. Like where you are in Texas is probably cheaper than where we are in California. Matt and I are in California. So, yeah, I mean, basically, if you think about 130 or 140 kilowatt hour battery pack, so it's whatever you're paying per kilowatt hour. It's gonna be basically the cost.
But, yeah.
You know, it's not insignificant. I mean, it's not as expensive as gas, but you know, it does mount up, and it's kind of like we think about. You don't think about the cost of charging your phone, but actually, we are going to have to think about the cost of charging the EVs, particularly if, like the Rivian, it takes so much juice that you can't just charge it overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the other part.
The best way to own an electric car right now is to have two of them if you have a Rivian, because you can drive the Rivian one day and then plug it in.
And then drive the other one. Now you got to swap cars. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's something you should do. If you could buy them, if you could actually get them. But that's a.
Yeah. Then there's that.
Yeah. I remember going to like the early Formula E races where they swap cars in the middle of the race and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
I mean that like it's like that. You have to have like a Rivian parked like, you know, somewhere up the road, and then you just swap over.
All right. So the Rivian pickup truck, we kind of knew it was kind of be like Ford Ranger size. There's going to be some limitations on how much room and stuff you're going to have inside, but I think that's fine. I don't think it's too small. I don't think it's too big. I haven't been in it yet, but just seeing them on the road and being able to get up close to them, it seems like a good compromise of its off-road capability and the ability to drive it within a city without having to drive a massive truck. That being said,
yeah, I agree.
It is still a pickup truck, so it competes with other trucks in that space. But when you get into the R1S, when you start getting into the SUV Rivian, how does that stack up against other SUVs in its class? Now, battery aside and how much energy it takes to suck up, but what about the driving of it? Like, what was the feedback from your guy on your staff? Is it comfortable? Is it roomy? Is it, you know, does it drive well? I mean, like, the actual functionality of it being an SUV.
Yeah, I think it's basically a good three-row SUV with, you know, proper space for people. So it's kind of, think of it almost like a Yukon. So we're not talking about Chevy Suburban big, you know, it's not a bus. You know, it's more like a kind of, you know, sort of Yukon sized, but it's a proper three row for three rows of adults with, you know, a bit of luggage space or reasonable luggage space behind. And then the rest of it, you know, is the same performance. It's the same battery pack. It's the same, you know, motors and stuff as the truck. So it's a good thing. And I know a couple of people local to me have put their name down for one. Because again, it's a bit like the truck. It's not too big. You know, Suburbans and stuff are huge, whereas actually a Yukon's actually quite manageable. So, you know, sort of Sequoia big, Yukon big, that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's a good thing. And I think, you know, it's whether any of these cars at the price point around 80 grand, even with the price hike that they did, I don't see how either of them are profitable as a product at 80 grand when you look at how big the batteries are and what's gone into them. But yeah. I guess, you know, as with a lot of startups, you've got to find your way into the market and go from there.
Right. Well, so now there's the company issue, right? And I don't want to pick on Rivian for having some issues with, you know, pricing things in, you know, incorrectly, you know, having to lay off some people and having huge delays. It wouldn't be fair to pick on them. If they were the only one, then it would be fair, but they're not the only one. Lucid has issues. Rivian has issues. Tesla's laying off people. They have issues. All of the big existing car companies are having issues, not just on staffing and stuff and availability, but also on quality control. I mean, we're seeing recalls and stuff already. Mustang Mach-E is coming back in for some issues. Ford Lightning, they've only delivered a handful and they're already, you know, I don't know, maybe I don't know if they're fully recalling them or there's a thing that they need to fix. But it seems like cars were, before the big bailout years ago, cars were kind of okay. There was a lot of, I think it was the head of GM at the time, was like, hey, we can release 22 models of cars, and if five of them do well, that's enough profit, we'll be fine. And then there's big bailouts, and they're like, well, we can't really do that anymore. We need to release 10 cars and have 10 of them be good. We can't even release 22 and get five right, right? So now we need good cars. And it seemed like everything was just kind of turning out to be pretty good. But now, I don't know if it's just supply chain issues or whatever, but the ball seems like it's kind of getting dropped on a lot of quality issues. What's your thought on that? And it's not just coming for these new cars, but and I'm not just talking about going, hey, BMW is going, hey, you know, we'll sell you a BMW. We can't give you heat seaters or a radio that works because we don't have the chips for it. But you can still buy a BMW. I'm just talking about, it seems like there's been some quality control issues almost across the board, like industry-wide.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, as you alluded to, is just supply issues, shortages, you know, which still maintains. And that's, you know, a function of the pandemic when all the shipping container issues and everything else that came with that. It's also things like the awful war in Ukraine has had an impact. Then it just sort of, you know, and then obviously the economic condition of the world are having started some sort of impact down the line. Interest rates are going up, and how's that affecting supply and demand? So you've got a big supply problem that people can't build the cars. there's also concern about people, you know, are we heading into a recession and everything else? But, you know, it is a basic reality, particularly in the EV world. People are struggling to, you know, to put these cars together. I was looking at the GV60, the new Genesis EV, which is a tremendous car, by the way. You know, and there's zero local inventory where I live. So inventory levels, we don't expect, and Edmunds obviously does a lot of work on this, their analysts and stuff, and we, you know, we're not expecting inventory to go back to a sensible level till next year at the earliest. How does that impact on quality and stuff? I mean, I do think there's obviously a transition to EVs and a lot of that, you know, a lot of that sort of, even for the brands, there's a big sharp learning curve. But recalls are nothing new. Maybe they get a bit more attention because it's an EV. I think on the startups, you know, that's a different story because starting a car company from scratch and particularly building a car from scratch is a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were very public with our criticism, some of the Lucid problems. I think partly a result of our feedback and what we did, then actually Lucid recalled, well, all their vehicles had to be recalled, but they've also instituted a lot more QA into their system. And the vehicle that we were originally going to have as our part of our long-term fleet, the vehicle that we were buying with our own money, we've ended up not getting that vehicle, but being supplied with a different vehicle, which was actually a much newer build. And the rationale for that is they said, we're just not comfortable with what with the original vehicle, but we're going to provide you with another one. And hopefully that's arriving in the next sort of week, 10 days. I mean, next time I come on, we can talk about that and how the quality has shifted from the early car that we drove to, you know, to ones rolling off the production line now. So I think there's two issues. There's the established, the original OEMs, if you like, getting up to speed with EVs and also struggling with supplier problems across both, particularly EVs, but also on some of the gas cars. And then there's this other factor, which is startups, you know, desperately trying to work out how to build a car. And, you know, the early Teslas were terribly built. You know, the early Model 3 was a bit of a shambles, and that's got a lot better. And I'm sure Lucid and Rivian will get there. I think Rivian at the moment is in a better place than Lucid in terms of the quality. But on our truck, you know, you really have to slam the doors.
Yeah.
So if you shut the doors without thinking and you have to open them again and give them a whack, you know, which is almost counterintuitive. I'm pretty, you know, genteel with my doors, particularly on classic cars.
Hey, my truck's the same way, but it's a 1995 Lightning. So I got to slam that goddamn door.
Yeah.
It's also
like you have the kids in the back and then you have to like whack the door in their face. It's not a good look.
Yeah, and it's loud and it's scary. I was trying to find the soft touch clothes. There was a company at SEMA that had an aftermarket device, but I'm not sure if the company's in business anymore and I can't find another company that makes it. But part of my issue is also because the door never seals well for me, that I went through and redid all of the weather stripping. And I don't mean I just replaced it. I ended up doing sort of two layers of weather stripping on the door. So it blocks out noise and elements and stuff. So I kind of modernized what was going on in the door. When you go and you buy a Lucid, do you work with Lucid to buy the vehicle or are they unaware of which vehicle Edmunds is going to get? Do you guys do it in partnership or do you do it in secret?
In all honesty, it's a bit of both. We tend to place the orders as individuals. It generally goes through my name, but then sometimes we'll work with them. But we're always, you know, we have access to different vehicles as well. So it's not like the only, you know, it's not like you can suddenly manufacture one of these in an entirely different way to give us a car. You know, I'm conscious that certain vehicles that come out for appraisal, the sort of things that you and I get, Matt, you know, might have, you know, they've probably been around it with a, you know, with a chamois and made sure that, you know, all the bits are hanging in the right place and that sort of thing. But you can't just kind of reinvent how you decide to build a car because this is the one going to Edmunds. So, you know, we tend to get them warts and all.
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree with you. I did a track day a few years back with Lexus, and they had a couple of LFAs there. One of the LFAs that I drove was fast, and one of the LFAs I drove was really fucking fast. and they were just standing there going, yeah, that one's faster than that one. I'm like, why? Like, that one was our – that's our test vehicle. And for whatever reason, like it wouldn't have made a difference because they sort of admitted it and they're like, we're running a different tune in that vehicle. But there is a noticeable difference. Now, granted, they may say, hey, we can't get the, you know, the MPGs out of the hotly tuned one to make sense for a production car, but it is nice to know that that potential was there because that car was fast. That thing was very cool.
I remember back in the day, the one that this is going back like 20 years.
Bill, you got to take off.
I started
right?
in this industry.
I got to go, guys.
Oh, cheers, Bill.
Sorry, buddy.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, gents. Y'all be well.
Sorry, go ahead. Continue.
Yeah, no, I say like when I go back, and it's probably, you know, passage of time and all that, but when you go back, when I started my career, you may remember that Audi or Volkswagen had this like 1.8 turbo, five-cylinder 1.8 turbo, which was in everything. Skodas in Europe, Audis, Seats, all sorts of stuff. And I think it came in every state of tune from about 150 horsepower to like 280 in an Audi S3. And you were always pretty sure on like the press cars that here was a Skoda that was supposed to have 150 horsepower, but maybe had the 180 or maybe the 210. Suddenly this thing would do like 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. And you go, you know, this thing weighs.
The math's not working out. It's just the weight to horsepower is just not even working out. The math is off.
I think the early days was also, I mean, it's way before my time, something called an MG Maestro. And this was like an early turbo car, and it had this, they did this like one-off test with a car magazine. It was like, you know, 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds, which at the time was crazy fast. And they ran an entire ad campaign that it was faster than a 911, faster than a Ferrari. It was like one car that then, you know, exploded shortly afterwards. So we've kind of like over the years, you kind of get wind of this stuff, and, you know, I've been party to a few things where you've looked at a car and gone, I'm sure that engine's not in the, you know, the appropriate state of tune or whatever. But I think we've all been doing it long enough and have enough experience that you kind of smell a rat fairly quickly.
Yeah. Okay. So some of the other vehicles we want to get into is you spent some time with the Genesis GV60, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is
great car.
This is their SUV, but this is not the three row. The GV80 is the larger one, which I really do like. The GV60 is, I don't know, it's kind of Audi Q5 size. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think we're getting ourselves confused between our GV60s and our GV70s.
Okay.
Because the GV60 is the EV, and then the GV70 is the gas car.
Because I drove them, I drove them both, and I was like, I drove the GV80, and then I drove the 70, right? I just drove the gas powered versions, and the GV60 is an EV?
The GV60 is the EV, so that's the
but it's
the
all
posh
EV
version.
or it's hybrid.
It's full EV.
Okay, all right. So tell us about it.
So that is the sister car to the Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is doing, you know, that sort of cool sort of like 80s sort of looking thing, which seems to be doing really well, particularly around here. And then the Kia EV6. So basically took one platform and one basic configuration and made three vehicles. The Kia EV6, which is kind of a lot more sporty. The Ioniq 5, which is kind of a real design statement. And then the GV60, which is the Genesis version, which is, you know, it's just everything's a bit, the luxury is just turned up everywhere. And there's some really cool stuff. We've just done a little piece. Somebody tipped us off that there was a secret drift mode. That if you like pushed a combination of buttons, it basically turned off the front axle. So we had a bit of fun of that at the test drive. But it's a while since I drove a car that I got, and I thought this is just really well done. Attention to detail is fantastic. The quality is great. It drives really nicely. The ride quality is superb. There's plenty of space inside. Trunk's maybe a bit small, but I was actually thinking about swapping the Model 3 that we have as our family car for one. You know, again, there's a few supply problems, but. You know, in entry-level trim, which has still got loads of kit, they're like 60 grand with 7.5 grand of federal tax credit back. So they're not cheap, of course, but they are they're a really nice thing.
And how is the ride quality compared to the gas engine car?
I mean, the GB70, which is the sort of BMW X3 rival, I think that's our reigning Edmunds top-rated SUV, and that's a really nice thing too. I mean, Genesis is doing some really good stuff at the moment. I mean, the GV60, I mean, there's two versions, both of which are really quick. And it's just comfortable. You know, you and I get into so much stuff where it's like, this is the sporty version. And, you know, like particularly around LA,
right, yeah.
You just feel like you're being beaten up every time. This thing just glides along. It's super quiet. There's a Bang & Olufsen hi-fi. I just thought it was a cool thing. Super comfortable seats.
What is the...
looks a bit curious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the look. I think it's okay. I think it looks pretty good.
I like it. It's distinctive.
I mean, the grill's like a little big in the front, but the back is always on point. I think what Genesis is doing on the back, the GV80, GV70, I think it's good.
I think they're really on a roll at the moment. You know, it's hard to break through as a luxury brand, but, you know, when I think about what they're doing relative to, say, what Infiniti are doing or even Acura, you know, Genesis seems to be the one that's really on the move, a bit like Kia and Hyundai are generally.
What kind of range are you getting out of that GV60?
I think we just got the results. Yeah, but over 200. So I think probably like 240-ish, something like that. I haven't got the exact fizzle in front of me, but it's kind of enough, basically. It's in that sweet spot of where everybody is. 248, they're claiming. Yeah.
248. Okay. Do we know if there's going to be different versions of this? Is there going to be a long range version, or does that not necessarily fit the model for Genesis?
Yeah, there's two. Well, there's a high performance version, and we think there might be an even higher performance version sometime in the future. I think in the future, they're probably going to do two. They might do a super fast version, although that's far from confirmed. And then there might be a single motor version that's cheaper. So at the moment, they've got one with 314 horsepower and one with 429. And there's about $9,000 difference between the two. And then they might bring in an entry level, and they might bring in a crazy fast one. But Genesis at the moment doesn't have, like Hyundai has the N brand for like Velocitas and stuff, but Genesis doesn't have a performance brand at the moment.
Yeah.
That could be
kind of interesting if they do. You kind of have to do it right. You don't want to do like, here's a performance brand, but we know it's not competitive with anything else that's performance out there, like, then don't do it. Like, either make it good and don't just say it's a performance badge and then, you know, it's got some trim and a, you know, half inch lower ride height and 14 extra horsepower. Like, either do it or don't do it, right? I'd rather them just go, we can't compete in the performance world, so we're going to do a luxury version. You know, we're going to get you the $60,000 version, but then we're going to get you the $100,000 version, and you're absolutely going to love it. It's going to have all sorts of Alcantara and great leather and amazing sound system, and it's just going to feel like, you know, the most bang for a buck in the luxury market. I'd rather them do that if they can't compete in the performance world, because I think they would do well.
Yeah, otherwise it's just weak.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like what Volvo do, you know, because otherwise it's just like, here's a version where we kill the ride quality.
Yeah, that's it. Like, oh, we're going to give you the same exact thing, but with stiffer springs and a little more sway bar, and now it rides a little rough. It really doesn't perform any different at all. It's not really any faster. It doesn't sound any different. Like, it's all pretty much the same. What sort of timing on the GV60? What's the availability?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are a handful. Look, I was saying, like, locally, there doesn't seem to be any inventory, but to me, but there is, you know, there's a few out there. But if you want one, I think it's a case of talking to your local dealer. It's the same with things like the Mustang Mach-E. You know, you can't order 2022. You've got to get a 2023, and that's not. Last time I looked, a couple of weeks ago, the order bank wasn't open. So it's still a tough market. I mean, the biggest thing I think is stay. You know, is keep looking ahead. You know, if you know that you're going to change your car in 6 months, be looking now. My lease is up on the Tesla in March. I can't extend the lease. Can't buy the car because they won't let me. So all I can do is hand it back. So, you know, I've got to plan ahead and make sure that I've got, you know, four wheels come next March. And I'm not just going to be able to go down the local dealer and buy one at that point.
Yeah. So that brings up a couple of questions. First of all, it sounds like more and more companies, Ford is the latest to get into eliminating the buyout feature on a lease. If you're buying a Ford EV like Mustang Mach-Es, maybe not if you currently have one under lease, but future purchases, there's not going to be a buyout option. And Ford is claiming so they can participate in the life cycle of that battery is basically what they're saying. Is, and maybe I'm getting the actual words incorrect, but they – it. As much as we're saying, oh, it's a value thing, it's a money thing, and they're going, no, no, no. We just, as Ford, we want to be involved with the entire life of that battery, you know, technology. They're saying, we, if you're leasing the vehicle, we want to be able to get it back and decide if that battery is resellable and what do we do and whatever. So I'm not saying it's an invalid argument. I'm just not sure if it's the proper argument.
Surely you can check on the battery data through over-the-air stuff anyway. You know, it's not like they couldn't monitor the battery health of the vehicle, whoever owns it at any time.
Not just health. I don't know. I mean, recycling and whatever. Like, I think they're basically saying if Ford ultimately owns this vehicle for the life of the vehicle, then they're involved with the vehicle's usage, and then they are involved with the dissolution of this vehicle.
But if you take, let's say you lease a Mach-E for 3 years, at the end of 3 years, it goes back to the dealer, and then the dealer's just going to wholesale it or sell it on the lot, isn't he? Is it like a certified pre-owned? At 3 years old, I mean, maybe at 10 years old, it's a different proposition. But at 3 years old, which is what we're talking about, off a lease, 3 or 4 years old,
yeah,
then they're just going to sell it on, surely. Yeah. I mean, I just
Ford is just saying they want to be involved, just like Tesla is basically saying they want to be involved. They don't want to just let it be a dealer thing.
Well, I can look at the data because it's actually on Tesla's website what my vehicle's worth. And the reason they won't sell it to me, I think, is a good part of like 12 grand worth of positive equity in it.
Yeah, that's probably
so. Because it was the pandemic hit, I was supposed to do 30,000 miles, and my wife was. We'd done 8,000 miles, and you know the car's going back. There's like 12 grand. You know, if I bought it, was able to buy it and sell it, you know, traditional way, I'd probably make about 10 grand, which of course is why I want to buy it and why they won't let me. But what it doesn't do is particularly endear me to buy another one, because if you look at Tesla's lineup, we like our Model 3; it's been great, but the only real option for me is another Model 3, which is basically the same car, but 40% more expensive, or 30-40% more expensive.
Right.
And then having gone through a fairly bad, you know, this bad consumer experience where you feel a little bit cheated, then it's like, okay, I'm going to look around. And now, 3 years on from when I bought the Model 3, there's a ton of choice out there. So I'm now looking at Hyundais and Genesis and, you know, Ford and, you know, a lot of other stuff like that.
So my thought initially was when these car companies were saying you can't buy out the car at the end of the lease, my first thought was, okay, fine, I can live with that. But I want my lease payment to be a lot less. I don't, you know, whatever. If somebody's spending $500 a month, I want it to be $300 a month now because I have no option to get this car later. And in your case where you got a lease payment probably before they even decided that you couldn't buy the car out, and you have about 10 or 12 grand of equity. If you traded it in for another lease on a Model 3, they should roll in that equity for you into the new vehicle and go, well, you know, here's 10 grand cash into the new vehicle for you, right? Or some reasonable amount, right? You know, half of it, or you know, 6 or 7 grand. And go, hey, you know, the new Model 3 is more expensive, but your car is worth more money. You know, we're going to take 7 grand of your equity in your car, roll it into the new one. You lease the new one, and we give you 7,000 off sticker or whatever. Right? Like, if you can't get the car at the end of the lease, then the lease should be less expensive. That's just kind of.
I've got two hopes, Matt. No hope and Bob hope, I think. You know, it's like there's zero chance of that happening. But we'll see.
Yeah, there's zero chance of that happening. But on future leases, if I went into a Ford dealer today and I said, I want a 2023 Mach-E, I want to lease it, and they go, oh, well, this is the price. I go, well, then what's the buyout? And they go, no buyout. Then I go, well, then the price is too high. Right?
I guess it depends what the market's going to do.
Yeah, if it's the same lease price as the guy who got it a year ago who can buy it out, you know, then I, you know, why am I paying the same thing he is? And he gets to buy the car out and maybe have some equity in it. So I've just, I don't know. I would, and listen, times will change. Maybe in a few years from now, none of these cars will be worth any money. And then the dealers are upside down, but who knows? But,
Do you know, I mean, I give you an example. We had an i3 before the Tesla Model 3, the BMW, which is just finished production. And we absolutely loved that car. That was I only had like 130 mile range, but just as a piece of design, you know, I think it's got the best interiors ever made. And when we chopped it in at the end of the lease, we did have a buyout clause. And the guy from BMW was like, I'm not even going to tell you what it is because it's absurd. And I think it was, I pushed him and I think it was like high 20s or something. And he's like, we can't sell these things. You know, the EV market's moved on. We're just going to wholesale it and get rid of it. Now, have you looked at the price of i3s recently? Like 40 grand or something. It's absolutely insane for a car with 130 miles. And
every wholesaler that's got 15 of those in their back lot's loving it right now, right? They're going to start putting them all over, bring a trailer.
We talked about this yesterday. I don't know the answer. I don't know whether anybody out there does. But as technology evolves, it would be cool to be able to like go back, you know, like classic cars, you know, obviously do retrofit and stuff. Could you retrofit bigger batteries to an i3? And maybe there's all sorts of electronic architecture reason why you can't do that. But it would be cool to think that you could kind of retrofit batteries that would allow you suddenly to have like a 250 mile range in an i3 in the future and then have it as like a classic EV.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, it's going to be a bit, you know, why would you have one if it won't go very far? So,
I mean,
it's an interesting thought.
I'm not sure about, you know, like a lot of like cell phones and other devices are like, oh, is your battery dead? You know, well, now you can get the knockoff battery that has 20% more life and it makes your phone 10% bigger, you know, but it does give you a little bit more battery. I don't know, but it seems like maybe not a battery swap for an i3 in 10 years from now, but maybe a software upgrade, things we've learned in the process that can make that car a little bit more efficient. Maybe it's just 10% more efficient, but maybe there's some things like that that can, you know, you're like, oh, I'm just gonna flash the, you know, the PCM in this car and you know, I'll get it my 10% more efficient. Although the battery's probably lost some of its life anyway, so you might be just getting it back up to factory specs is probably what you're – just sort of a restoration process, not really an upgrade. The other thing you mentioned was your lease is up beginning of next year. I was talking with Adam Carolla, and his lease is up. And he was like, you know, I like the SUV. He's driving the Lincoln Aviator plug-in hybrid. And he's like, all the plug-in hybrids, he was like, I want an SUV, something with a decent amount of room in it. Doesn't have to be Navigator size, but, you know, something like is Aviator size, maybe 3-row. And he goes, but all of the plug-in hybrids are getting like 19 miles to the gallon. And nobody seems – or sorry, 19 miles of range on the battery itself. And I know it's supposed to be a combination of – gas engine and battery, so the overall range of the vehicle and the miles per gallon is better. But why hasn't this changed? We got brand new Range Rover, which is gorgeous, is out. The plug-in hybrid version, something like 18, 19 miles of EV range. Everything out there just seems to be, for the plug-in hybrids, like 19, 20 miles, 18 miles, you know, of range. The Porsche Cayenne, you know, hybrid is in the same boat. Why is this 19, 20 mile range sort of become the magic number? Why couldn't it be 50?
Well, I think the Range Rover, actually, the new one, is actually an interesting example. I think that's going to go further. I forget off the top of my head, but I think it's somewhere like 60, 70 miles potentially. And then it actually becomes very usable. You know, you're running around the city all the time. You run around in EV mode. Then, you know, if you're going away on the weekend or towing or something, then, you know, that makes sense. I'm kind of with you. I think it's just a cost. It's a cost and packaging thing that if you think about it with a plug-in hybrid, you've got to have both the engine, the batteries, and the electric motor and the charger and all the paraphernalia that goes with it. So you've got to house that somewhere. So if you're going to make the battery pack bigger, you've got to find more space. Yeah, A, you've got to find more space for it, and B, then you're towing away around more weight, more cost. So it's always this sort of balancing act. So in something as big and expensive as a Range Rover, you can probably afford both fiscally and packaging wise to have more batteries, more space. But in like a, you know, like a Toyota, you know, like a RAV4 or something, you just don't have the room, and you don't want to add another, you know, 10 grand to the MSRP purely in terms of battery cost. So yeah, the problem is with them, you know, they are a compromise in that you've got both power systems.
When are we going to get,
almost by definition,
when are we going to get a nice luxury EV SUV? Now, we've got a handful of, I don't want to say entry-level market ones, but, you know, you mentioned like sort of RAV4-ish size, CRV size of vehicles. We're getting hybrids and EVs and that. But when do we get, you know, a good size, you know, a Ford Explorer, Navigator, you know, BMW X5 size EV?
So, I mean, obviously we talked about the Rivian at the beginning of the show. That's, you know, yeah, that's
the closest,
here and now,
right?
If you can get one. Although let's face it, you order one now, it's still going to be probably a year or more. They are coming. The cavalry is coming. There's a new Mercedes. Mercedes has got this weird naming policy. Instead of having like different names for the SUVs, they seem to be going with the same name. So you've got an EQS SUV.
And there's
EV,
an EQB. There's like a smaller
EV? So the EQB is the GLB, which is the gas car. There's basically now an electric version of that, but that's small. Then there's going to be an EQE, which is they're basically the GLE sized.
Okay.
That will be an EV. And then there will be a GLS, effectively an EQS, which will be a large electric SUV. So kind of, you know, that'll be a three row. So, you know, if Adam's coming out of an Aviator hybrid, then that would probably, that either the EQE or the EQS SUVs would probably be the way forwards.
And that's, you know, still about
a
year.
In the US, yeah, probably about a year. We're going to drive fairly imminently, maybe a bit less actually. But yeah, still in the next few, still a little way away. Beyond that, I mean, everybody's going to hit the market sooner or later. There's things like an EV Chevy Blazer coming out. There's a few things in the offing, but nothing of that scale.
Yeah. Okay. Before we wrap up, let's shift gears a little bit, because I think you got to spend some time in the BRZ.
I did. We actually have one of those on our long-term test fleet. And I drove it in the office this morning, and, you know, we've talked about this before. It's got like 220 horsepower or something, little manual gearbox. Honestly, I love that car.
Yeah.
It doesn't sell. People don't buy it because it's not super practical. And if you want a sports car, people tend to go up market and get something luxury. But even just running around LA, like every journey's a bit of fun. You know, the engine sounds great. It's naturally aspirated. It's got a bit more torque now than the old version. The gearbox is terrific. The steering's terrific. It's really tight and compact. And I just think it's a really, really great car.
How do you fit in it? You fit pretty well in
it?
Oh, fine. I mean, it's a small car.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm 6'4", and I'm fine. I mean, anybody sat behind me, because there were a couple of token rear seats, but, you know, it might get you home from the pub. But, yeah, I mean, it's the Toyota. We prefer the Subaru version, the BRZ, rather than the G86, but it's GD86, isn't it?
Yeah.
We prefer the BRZ, but, yeah, it's just a cool thing, and it's affordable, and if you want to have something fun and you can go and track, you know, put it on a track day without, you know, needing a whole new set of brakes and four new tires, it's a cool thing. We've actually got it partly for driver training, because we do a bunch of driver training for our test team and, you know, the rest of the guys and girls, should say, and, that's why we got it.
Actually a great car for that. I think that it's a great car for like the driver training, because it's got all the characteristics of a sports car. It does perform well for what it is, fairly inexpensive and not overly powerful. Like, you could focus on driver skills before you need to step up and focus on how to handle power. Like, I think that's a good.
Yeah, and it's rear wheel drive. You can turn all the stability control off. So as long as you haven't got like a super grippy surface, you know, and you can actually feel what the car's doing. And as you say, without having to do, you know, insane speeds and everything else, just because that's what the car is capable of. So I think they're great. And, you know, particularly on the road or on like the canyon roads and things like that, you know, the ability to have fun in it. I went out on Angeles Crest near LA with a couple of friends the other week, and I took my classic car, my, I have a 993-911, and they were in one of my friends in a GT3, and another one had a 911, and they're both doing okay in life. And, you know, yeah. I just thought the 993 was so nice because, you know, I wasn't like pushing it like crazy, but it hasn't got too much power. And you're just like, you know, it sounds fantastic, and it was such a great experience. And don't get me wrong, I love GT3s as well, but on the road, you know, they've got so much tire, so much grip, so much ability that really you almost got to go to a track if you're really going to explore them.
Yeah. And the 993 is fun. It's just a good classic sports car. Hang out of that one for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure your daughter's going to start eyeballing that thing going, hey, this thing's kind of cool.
I've got 13 years to go yet before she even gets a sniff of the car keys. So, and even then.
Yeah, well, she's going to start eyeballing that thing way before 13 years. It's just a matter of when she's allowed to actually drive it. What else is going on at Edmunds? What have we got to look forward to? You've always got some great videos and stuff out there. I can't believe you guys put 20,000 miles on your GT500, by the way. It seems like just yesterday you got it.
Yeah, it's probably a terrible thing to do from an investment perspective. But yeah, we loved it. I hadn't driven it for a while. I was at the test track on Monday, and I was showing somebody around the test track, so I thought it was a fun car to use. And you forget just like what a crazy beast that thing is. It's been great. You know, it's done. We love it to bits, and it's been 20,000 fairly hard miles.
I was just going to say, it's like the most well-documented beat-up GT500. I mean, I know you guys take good care of it, but that's 20,000 pretty rough miles on that car. I mean, it's gonna need some attention at some point.
Don't kill my residuals. I might be about to sell it. I think any potential owner will find that it's actually a magnificent car in perfect condition, never been tracked.
It is the best GT500 you could buy. It is going to be just
nicely running over 20,000 miles. Yeah. You know, just in its sweet spot. So
it is the only GT500 where it definitely had all of the bugs worked out. This is the car to get if you see an orange GT500 pop up for sale. Definitely pay over whatever they're asking.
Well, not only that, it's a famous car. It's as driven by the elite Edmunds crew.
Yeah, they are elite. So what else is on the docket for you guys at Edmunds? I mean, we're getting a lot of car news, but not a lot of cars. So how does that affect you guys?
It's an interesting conundrum, and it's for both us and the industry that, you know, you create all this noise and buzz around cars that sometimes you can't even buy. And, you know, that's something that we do wrestle with at times. No, I mean, it's an exciting time. I did the video myself that we just launched the Honda CR-V. That went live yesterday. We're having a look at the Type R, Honda Civic Type R next week. There's a couple of other things that I can't even tell you about. There is indeed. As you might imagine, all over that. So yeah, there's a couple of stuff. I'm trying to remember where all the embargoes, where all the top, what's secret and what's not as we speak. But try not to break any of those. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff right now. It's a really busy time for us. Really exciting time. You know, both a mix of some of the, you know, more fun and enthusiast stuff, and, you know, a lot of the kind of, you know, proper, what you might call proper family cars. And the CR-V.
The CR-V is very important. You know,
I mean, it's huge. It is as I say in the video, it is the fifth. I think is it the third or the fifth? I wrote the script. I can't even remember. I think it's the third or the fifth biggest selling vehicle in the world.
Yeah.
Literally. I think just behind Toyota, I think it's the third. I think it's the third biggest selling vehicle in the world. And they're shifting almost 1 million units a year.
So if I had a guess, it would be like Honda, Ford F-150, Toyota RAV4, then Honda CR-V.
No, I mean, F-150 is only big in America, remember? So we're talking global here. So I think it's RAV4. Is it Corolla? Camry? And then CR-V. And I think F-150 is in the top 10, but it's obviously big in America, but not you know, obviously not sold in Europe and Asia and that sort of thing.
Do you guys have a video out already on the CR-V? The new CR-V?
We do. I could commend it to you.
Just because the CRV is an important vehicle, right? It's not the sexiest thing out there, but you know, when I was looking around for a car for my mom, we looked at Toyota RAV4, RAV4 hybrid, CRV, and now there's new CRV hybrid. This is, you know, this is kind of their F-150, right? Where you go, this is something that if Honda's going to invest in, this is the one they should invest in the most, because it needs to do well for them, right? They sell so many that it needs to be good. I hope it's good.
Yeah. And what it is, I think, you know, you're right. It's if I look at like the site traffic on Edmunds, I think this is typically the first or the second most researched vehicle, because it is just that heartland American family SUV, and understandably so. And we've always, not only has it sold well, we've also, you know, it continues to be our sort of top ranked family SUV, even the old model in its death throes, because it doesn't really do anything wrong. And I think the new one is a very sensible evolution. You know, the engines are, the hybrid's updated, but the 1.5 turbo's the same. And, you know, it is just a very sensible evolution of the CRV. There's nothing that you look at and go, wow, that's cool, or that's really interesting, or that's really going to like move the game on. But also nothing that you look at and go, why have they done that? Or the time, I mean, Honda and Toyota, particularly Honda, does this sort of gentle evolution of everything. And they kind of just keep iterating it till they get it right. The only thing sometimes that catches them out, and I think this might be true of EVs at the moment, is when people really move the bar. And I remember a few years ago, they screwed up the Civic because they kind of took a view, you know, they compared it to vehicles in that place in time. And then when somebody else moves the goalpost, they get caught out. But from what I've seen of the CRV, and, you know, I sat in it and played with it, but I haven't driven it yet, I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be there or thereabouts for sure.
Yeah.
Not the most exciting thing ever, but it's just really well executed.
Yeah, just a good safe buy. It's just like a car that you're going to enjoy and you're going to be comfortable with, and it's going to be reliable, and it's there's a reason why they sell so many of them.
Exactly.
Well, I'm definitely curious in checking out that video, because it is such a mainstream vehicle, and to be able to compare those things with like a RAV4. And I've always been a fan of the Mazda. You know, I always thought the Mazda SUV, I don't know how it does well in sales. It might be the only vehicle that Mazda is selling that keeps Mazda on the map, but they've done a pretty good job with their SUV.
Yeah, the CX-5, but also we've just driven the CX-50, which is it's sort of like they're saying it's not a replacement to the CX-5, but it's kind of like a newer version, slightly bigger of the CX-5. That's really good as well.
Are they going to keep so the CX-5 when and the CX-50?
I think for now, and they're kind of doing a little bit like what Honda did with the Passport, almost saying, okay, this is a slightly different take. It's supposed to be a bit more kind of like, you know, sort of adventure vehicle and stuff. But the reality is it's a family SUV. So when the CRV comes out, I think the biggest test is going to be, you know, CX-50 against CRV. And Mazda's just doing such a great job with things like quality and, you know, the touchy-feely stuff and the style bit. And, yeah, you might pay a little bit more, but it feels sort of more of a kind of premium product than the mainstream now. And I think they've done a terrific job.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap things up. We appreciate it every time you're on, Alistair. Great updates. We're going to check in with you again. Do you think we've got some stuff to look forward to toward the second half of this year? Do we think like LA Auto Show is going to be an event worth going to? Like, what's your feeling on it now? Are we done with auto shows?
I think so.
Or are we going to go? Well, you're going to go.
I think we're I'm going to go. That's not a mutually exclusive question. I'm going to go, but are we done with them? I don't know. I mean, New York was quiet. I mean, you got Detroit first in September.
Okay.
You know, and there's a big effort around Detroit to try and reimagine it as being not in the freezing waste of January, but in September, and a bit more sort of experiential. Let's see how that goes. You know, I think the big three up there are going to have to, you know, at least pay lip service to that. LA, I think potentially, I think there could be some interesting stuff at LA. You know, it's a good time of year. It's the end of the year. It's LA. It's a place people want to come to. So, yeah, I hope so. I still enjoy auto shows. I still enjoy the buzz of them. And, you know, I spoke to some people in New York who said, actually, from a consumer perspective, the ability to come in and, you know, that see the cars and everything else in a no pressure environment was is still really beneficial. The challenge is, you know, if people haven't got cars to sell, but I think at the end of the year you're going to start to see inventory levels creep up, more vehicles available. So I hope so. I hope Detroit works. I hope New York works. And
yeah,
you know, I remain a fan of auto shows. I still think of them as a kid. You could go there; it was exciting. You know, everything was shiny and new, and it's a great kind of barometer of, you know, what a crazy world the automotive, you know, made. And if everything goes digital, it's a bit like working from home, right? You don't want a completely digital world where everybody just sits in front of a screen looking at Instagram. You know, it's actually quite nice to go and see real people. And maybe I'm old. See real people and prod a few dashboards and stuff, you know.
Yeah, and I like to see the vehicles in person. You kind of see the size of them, and you get to see the angles and the shapes and what works and what doesn't, because everything can be sort of photographed in a good way. But it seemed like these auto shows, if you remember years ago, it's like everybody was rolling out with some cool stuff and a concept car. Like every booth had, this is the future of us. And then the car companies were like, that's not super cost effective for us. So if we're doing a concept car, it's going to be like 90% close to production, you know, like the new Z. And now that the car companies can't sell any cars or make any cars, I think there's going to be a lot of concept cars. I think there's going to be a lot of like, this is going to be the future of our brand. And like, oh, where's the new cars? We're like, well, we don't have any, so we can't make any. I mean, I don't know how many shows we can go and we can stare at an F-150 Lightning on the showroom, you know, on a show floor, but not in a dealership yet, because that thing's popped up everywhere from LA Auto Show last year to Barrett Jackson to all over the place. I'm like, yeah, you know, I get they're delivering some, but I haven't seen one yet. I haven't seen mine. Yeah, so maybe more concept cars at Detroit and LA this year.
For sure. Let's hope so. It's exciting.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Go to edmunds.com. If you're buying a car, if you're selling your car, or doing all that stuff, researching a car, check him out. And you can find Alistair. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter. Are you still Weaver on cars? No, you're Alistair Weaver. What's your Instagram?
No, Instagram's Weaver on Cars.
Weaver on Cars.
You'd be mad not to follow. It's epic stuff. Yeah.
Follow him on Twitter because he's got some fans. People love the way he dresses. People love what he says. People love to talk shit. Follow Alistair on social media. You'll enjoy yourself. All right. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you soon. Until next time, keep the air and the spare and the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.